Hey y'all, and welcome back to the Sweet Tea Series. I'm your host, Taylor Dawson Bouchel, and I'm joined today by Bunny Pounds. She is the founder and president of the Christians Engaged Ministry. Bunny, welcome to the show.
Taylor, it's so great to be with you. Sweet tea and all.
You're so peppy. I love it. So today we're going to talk about her newest book, Jesus and Politics. And we're going to talk about a little bit of how you can get involved with your civic duties. And then we're going to talk a little country music, a little bit about East Texas. So join us for the ride. How are you today?
I'm great. Drove down to Austin and it was, you know, a nice, enjoyable ride.
Yeah, I've made that ride like 3 times in the last 2 weeks and I'm a little over it. I'm like, okay, I can take a pause on that much driving. In my mind, Dallas and Austin are close and then I get on the road and I'm like,
oh, 3 hours, so 3.5 hours. Yeah, it's a little bit of a drive.
Yeah, which in Texas, I know everyone's like, oh, that's nothing. And I'm like, I know, but I feel like it's something. It feels like it's something. So you currently live in Dallas, right? Mm-hmm. And so we'll get into your background and all the different things you've done with your life, because you have done a ton. You've been a missionary. You've been a small business owner. You have run very successful campaigns, and you even ran for office yourself. Is that correct?
I did.
And then it was for Texas's 5th district?
Yes, for Congress in the 5th congressional district, which is East Dallas County, East Texas.
Yes. Okay. So speaking of East Texas, I think I've mentioned this on the show before, but we have a very small cabin on Cedar Creek Lake in Gum Barrel City.
Oh, I love Gum Barrel City.
Which I know is in your district. I looked it up and I was like, oh my goodness, she is my people. She like has Kaufman and you have Athens and like Mesquite. Like I grew up going to the Mesquite Rodeo. So I was like, you hit all of like my favorite places.
Well, and Congressman Jeb Hensarling, my former boss that I ran for his seat when he retired, he has a little house in Murchison there by Athens. So we go out to his lake house all the time. I have perpetual rights to the lake house.
That's awesome. It is so pretty in Athens. Like there's a little bit of hill, there's some trees. I always pictured like it would be a really fun place to own horses out there, because it's like there's at least places to ride, I feel like, out there.
Yeah, East Texas is heaven. Yeah. Heaven. So if you haven't been to East Texas, folks, you better go out there and go bass fishing.
Bass fishing. So the tea that I made for us today, it's a Texas tea, but it has mint from East Texas in it. And so I thought it was so fun because when I was growing up, we had like mint growing out of this like little hole that was like by our lake. And all of like, we were told there were snakes. It was a snake pit. And so we'd be really brave and like go out and pick the mint and like go put it in our tea. And now I just have a company do it for me.
Well, it's very good, Taylor. Very good.
Thanks. So tell us a little bit about your book. I have it right here for those who can't see it. As a graphic designer, I approve of the cover. I think it's very creative. I like that you use paint and then you get that blend of the two, which is that purple. Big fan. Tell us a little bit about the book itself.
Yeah, well, I wrote the book. I didn't really think I had a lot of stories to tell till I sat down and wrote it. But I wanted to inspire people of faith that really don't have a lens that they can get involved in government and politics, that you can be people of faith and get engaged in the culture. So a lot of Christians think it's a horrible mudslinging thing. Right. Ugly, you know, why would I want to be involved in that? And why would I want to have my kids engaged with it? We have a really hard time even voting, let alone engaging as people of faith. So I wanted to inspire Christians that, hey, you can get involved in government and politics. The next generation can, and look at it as a ministry. Secondly, I wanted to inspire Christians that are currently involved in the political movements, regardless of where that is, that when they sign up to get involved, they still should be Christ followers. Mm-hmm. They should still look at the Bible and operate their life in the lens of that, because I think you and I both have been involved for a long time and seen Christians that claim the name of Christ and don't particularly act the way they should.
Yeah.
And so we need to be operating within a biblical mindset within the kingdom of God, even as we engage in politics or government. So it's like Pastor Bunny helping the people to, you know, hey guys, I've been involved with this 16 years. I still love Jesus. It's a miracle. Can I help you watch your heart as you engage?
Yeah, that's amazing. I feel like I need to pivot. Is your actual name Bunny? Because I feel like that's a question you probably get on a daily basis.
Girl, when I was running for Congress in 2018, that was the most asked question of any forum. You know, they didn't care about my federal public policy positions. They just want to know, is my name Bunny? Yes, my name is Bunny. It's on my birth certificate. My dad was a veteran. He got actually born again, accepted Jesus as his personal Lord and Savior, watching Billy Graham on TV one day in the Army. Mm-hmm. And Billy Graham's one of his daughters, Ruth, and her nickname is Bunny. They called her Bunny. And my dad read a story about Billy Graham and held on to that and thought it was cool. Now, one little fun thing is my sister's name is Sunny. So Bunny and Sunny.
Oh, my goodness.
I know that totally goes with the sweet teeth theme, right? So Bunny and Sunny. But I didn't find out till I finished the book and my mom read it. I thought my dad had always pushed for me to be Bunny. But she said, no. He came to me and said, I want to name her Nicole and nickname her Bunny. And she said, well, why would we call her something else? That doesn't make any sense to me. So she said we should just stick it on the birth certificate. So thanks, Mom.
That's a really cool story of how you got your name. And honestly, Bunny and Sunny, I feel like could play really well on a podcast. Like just the two of you just going back and forth. My sister's name is Goldie and it's her real name. She's named after Goldie Hawn.
Oh.
But she gets that all. I'm always there where they're like, is Goldie her real name? And I'm like, yes, it's her real name. If you're from Texas, you know Goldie Hawn. Like she's a real person. That's who she's named after. So
Overboard.
Yeah,
one
exactly.
of my favorite movies.
Exactly. That's the mom.
Kurt Russell was so hot in that movie.
Yes. And also love that they're still married and they like really preach good things about like marriage and staying in it and getting through the rough path. But that's just a little side tangent. So I worked in DC for a while and it's funny how many people are like, I could write a book. I want to write a book or I should write a book about this. Da, 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 da. Like everyone always wants to write a book, but you actually did it. What was the process of like getting started? Like we'll dive into it, but I just feel like it's not always talked about of like making that leap from idea to paper to publishing. Yeah. So what was that journey like for you?
Well, I self-published for years. My husband and I pastored house churches and I wrote Bible studies for our house churches. So I had a kind of a workflow of writing really early in the morning. Mm-hmm. And I've done that for years. And I write a column for thestream.org every week or most weeks I write a column. So I've got used to writing, but I had this outline in my head. I knew that the next generation loves stories. They don't love how-to books, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. Gen Z does not do well with how-to books. So I was praying and saying, Lord, how can I, you know, try to engage young people that they, you know, plant a seed in their heart that staffers and consultants and people of faith in all spaces of government is needed. And I thought, you know what? I should just tell some of my crazy stories of walking with members of Congress. And so I wrote out the outline and then I took off work December 2022, which is what you don't do when you run a nonprofit. You don't take off work in December when you're supposed to be raising money.
Exactly. I was like, isn't that the big fundraising month?
Yeah,
exactly,
yeah. But I did it for 3 weeks because I knew I wasn't going to have any other chance to mm-hmm. sit down and write it. And I went to three different locations, left my husband, came home on the weekends and really pounded it out for 3 weeks and wrote the whole thing. And then it went through six rounds of edits after that.
That's
but,
awesome.
Yeah, it was a real blessing to get the story out. And when I actually finished writing it, I knew, wow, God was going to use this story somehow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I was just reading it. I actually saw a lot of things that we have in common. So you're one of the first people I've met outside of graduating that went to Dallas Baptist University. Like, that's where I graduated from.
Wow.
Isn't that crazy?
Patriots.
Go Patriots.
Go Patriots.
And then I saw in your foreword, it was just so many people in D.C. that I worked with, or in your, is it like acknowledgments?
Yeah,
or
all my, yeah, recommendations, whatever.
Yeah, oh my goodness. The amount of people that I, like, have worked with and respect and admire and hope to meet one day, like, that gave your book glowing reviews was just like amazing. Like all these overlaps of like, I used to work for her and I used to work for them and I've worked with them. That's so fun. But DBU specifically, did you get your graduate degree from there?
So I did my bachelor's. I was 28 years old when I went back to school at night. I had gone to my first state convention and testified in front of the platform committee and got hooked that I could change something in the platform. And I came home and told my husband, we were running a franchise at that point, Roly Poly Sandwiches. over by SMU for people that have been to Dallas.
So that's the small business part.
Small business part. Oh, cool. And I said, hey, can I take a Constitution class and, you know, maybe American government class and just, you know, experiment with taking some classes. And 3.5 years later, I finally finished my bachelor's.
That's awesome.
While homeschooling my kids. So it was a long 3.5 years to finish 2 years of a bachelor's because I already had an associate's in theology. But yeah, never went and did my master's. I was thinking about that at one time in my career, and Congressman Hinserling actually talked me out of it. He says, you don't need that. Just go do the stuff.
I was talked out of it too, which makes me feel good that you brought that up. Because like a thing that we've consistently talked about on this podcast is that, like, you know, master's degrees, I feel like we're very much pushed on the millennial generation.
Yeah.
Only to find out that it was a lot of money and not a great use to us going forward. So unless it's something very specific, like a medical degree or a teaching degree that you need to continue your, you know, professional journey, like that's when it really counts. But how was it like doing graduate school as an adult? Because to me, it seems like you would get so much more out of it because you're an adult, you're not distracted by, you know, the social things. I mean, you do have kids and you do have a family, so that's definitely something.
Yeah, my kids were, let's see, they were like 5 and 7 when I started, and they were 2nd and 4th grade when I finally graduated. And you know, what I loved about it is I actually bought my textbooks, and that means I actually read my textbooks, like the whole thing. So all these 18 to 21 year olds were in my night classes, you know, the ones that didn't want to wake up in the morning early. So they took night classes and they're like, what is it about? And I'm like telling them, right, here's the whole history. But it was so much fun as an adult to, and then I was also homeschooling my kids. So I would take back what I learned in my American history class or geology class or whatever. And
that's cool.
Teach my kids with it. Right.
Yeah.
So it's a learning. I think you really value education and learning more as you get older.
Yeah. I mean, I'm always tempted to like, I mean, UT is right around the corner. So I'm always tempted to like go back and just like audit a class or just like, I love learning. Okay. Little pivot on your website for Christians Engage. Is that the DBU steeple on the main homepage? Do you know? Cause I saw it and I was like, is that DBU? That might be. I mean, it looks like every other church steeple, but still.
I don't think so. I think my graphic artist just found it, but it's a very cool picture.
Yeah, I love
it. We just updated our homepage. So
it looks really good.
Very cool.
So you're now obviously the president of Christians Engage. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah. So after my race for Congress in 2018, I had a large consulting firm before that. And I realized, wow, God, why did you have me run for Congress and lose? Mm-hmm. It was a real, I tell a lot about that in the book, because I think people don't understand just failure and the pain of people going out and doing something. And then you're unsuccessful, especially when you've been successful all your life. So I was really seeking the Lord about that. And I really, this is going to sound weird to some people, but I really felt like the Lord said, I'm waking up the church for America. I'm going to start waking up people to the importance of protecting liberty. Mm-hmm. And we need to have, there's weaknesses within the body of Christ. When I talk about the church or the body of Christ, I'm talking about the big C church, meaning everybody, Protestants, Catholics, anybody who claims the name of Christ, right? That Christians that have a biblical worldview should be doing 3 things, but we're not. Pray, vote, and engage. Mm-hmm. We're not talking to God about what's happening in our nation. We're consumed with our own lives most of the time. So we're not dialoguing with the Lord about what's happening in the news or the crisis at the border or foster care kids or homelessness or whatever the issues are. We're not even thinking about them. Secondly, we're not voting in every election. Only 50% of the body of Christ votes, just like the general public. Mm-hmm. We're really no different than the general public when you look at statistics. And then we're not engaging. So how do we teach Christians to pray, vote, and engage regularly? Mm-hmm. And then I put my political consulting brain on and figured out, okay, not only do we need to motivate and speak and talk to Christians about that in churches, on social media and events, but we need to actually mobilize them with a system. So we built a get out the vote system for Christians in all 50 states, where we send them reminders and texts and emails to vote in every election. And then we've built now 7 major on-demand video curriculum courses, 6 to 8 hour courses to teach Christians about civics and biblical worldview topics, including a campaign school.
I Love it. So in 2016, I was my senior year at DBU, and I was always aware of politics. I mean, my dad and I always say I was raised on Fox News. And, you know, it was like every morning my dad and I would have a discussion about what's going on. And I'd be like, yeah. But, you know, as I get older, I had to make my opinions for myself. And so in 2016, big election, you have Hillary and Trump. Things are very contentious. Mm-hmm. And that's when, you know, I'm sure you'll recall, like, Christians were having a really hard time thinking, like, are we really going to vote for Trump? Like, mm-hmm. he's bad. He says nasty things. I don't know if I can vote for someone with that character. And it was really hard for me seeing my, you know, fellow students kind of just not want to be involved in it. Yep. And I kept taking a step back and I was like, who's voting? Are you voting? Are you voting? And I'd started a chapter with this group, with CWA, their Ooh. YWA chapter, Young Women for America.
Love Penny and the whole CWA team. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
It's our Women for America.
Exactly. Yes. Thank you. And I had started a chapter at DBU with that. And I remember like trying to get girls to, you know, and I was a part of sorority. I was like, oh, it's going to be so easy to get everyone involved in this. And they were just like, oof, we just don't want to talk about it. It's a little messy. Like, I'm not sure I want to vote for him. He's bad. He's mean. And I kept telling them, I was like, it's more than just like who you think they are. It's like you're going to vote someone in who's going to be pro-abortion and be like not, doesn't have the greatest track record for foreign affairs. Yep. Like, have you ever heard of Benghazi? You know, it's like all these little things. I was like, this feels so obvious to me. And I remember getting so frustrated. Like, why are my fellow Christians, especially my fellow female Christians?
Yes.
Because we had a female running for office. Why are they not more engaged and trying to really understand what's happening rather than just saying, ooh, it's icky. Like, I don't want to be a part of this. And so I just like, that was my breakthrough of like, I've never thought about going to DC, but like, I think I'm going to get involved. Like, this is like, for me, it was like the tipping point of like, that's it. Like, I need to dedicate time and be involved in this. So eventually I moved to DC and got to work on all that stuff. But if I had known about Christians Engaged at that point, it just would have been amazing because I love that you guys have a whole page dedicated to local elections.
Yeah.
Because, like, that's where it really counts. And then the videos, like, you explain why it counts. And this is what, you know, the school board does. And this is the impact the city council has. And, you know, being in Austin, we know how much the city council has an effect on our daily lives. Like, we feel it. I feel like small towns, maybe not so much. I don't know. I haven't lived in one as an adult. But I just have to say, I love the website and I love all the resources that
Thank
you guys
you.
Have.
Well, part of it is to kind of talk common sense to people of faith, because we get sometimes, even as Bible-believing Christians, we get consumed with the news or podcasts, or mm-hmm. we listen to all these other voices, and we're not really thinking, you know. We have to pick between imperfect candidates. Jesus is not on the ballot, people.
I love that.
He's not. And so we have to go, oh, okay, we have to weigh things. You're going to make mistakes. I hear it from Christians all the time. I don't want to vote because I don't want to make a mistake.
Mm-hmm.
Let me just set you free. You're going to make a mistake. You're going to choose somebody that you're not going to eventually like one day. And when you don't like them and they aren't doing what you want them to do, then you vote them out the next time. But we have to understand, this is my frustration, is that we're not researching our ballot. We're not taking 30 minutes and turning off Netflix, my friend, to research our ballot and look at what the policies they stand for, look what the political parties stand for, and really go, okay, where's my part to play? Because the founders of this nation gave us a gift that we get to elect our representatives. We have a constitutional republic, so we get to choose people that hold our worldview if we want.
Mm-hmm.
But because we don't participate, Proverbs 29:2 says, when the righteous are in authority, the people rejoice. When the wicked man rules, the people groan. Because we're not participating, there becomes a vacuum. And who fills the vacuum? Are people that don't share our values. And that's devastating for our county and our city and our state and our nation. And I frankly think, Taylor, we're not loving our neighbors well. If we really loved our neighbors well, we would participate in the process, because it helps your neighbor
mm-hmm.
if you elect people that have your worldview.
No, I
and
love
our servant
that.
Leaders.
Yeah, I love the way that you humanize the voting process, because I think there is a level of perfectionism that plays up of like, you know, it's so easy to make excuses of like why I should not go out and vote. And, you know, the first one is like, oh, like I don't know anything about the candidates. I don't know. Or I'm not registered. How do I get registered? Like, oh, that's too much. That's such a chore. Or, you know, I'm busy this day. Like there's no way I could make time to drive 12 minutes and spend 5 minutes voting.
Oh, and friend, it makes me crazy.
But the way that you break it down on your website, I think cuts through a lot of that. You give like such great little synopsis of like, hey, here's kind of generally what's going on here. And then you link to very specific resources and you tell them, here's how you register to vote. And it's actually not that hard. It actually doesn't take that much time. And oh, and then it just starts to get easier and easier and easier. And the fact that someone's talking about it, I think means a lot too. Because if everyone's just putting their head in the sand and no one's talking about it, it's easy to keep your head in the sand.
Well, we're a discipleship ministry trying to, we have to walk people through the process. And what I love about our system is we actually remind people. So if there's a primary going on in Pennsylvania or Virginia or Texas, we're going to remind you, hey, early voting starting in the Texas primary, the Texas runoff, the Texas local elections. We're going to remind you when early voting's ending 3 days before the election and on election day. And we give them a five-step guide to print off their ballot, research their ballot, pray about their ballot. If every Christian would do that, again, 30, 45 minutes. I moved into a new city from Garland to Richardson last year, and I had to research my local ballot just like everybody else. I didn't know the people. 45 minutes. Okay, 45 minutes. I turned off Yellowstone for 45 minutes, right? Whatever our TV show is, Survivor is actually mine. Survivor, I'm addicted. I'm on season 35 or 36 right now. But turn the TV off and care about your nation for just a minute. And think about what you can do to impact that. And Taylor, we know local elections matter, but one person can, and we've seen elections won by one vote, 10 votes, 100 votes. One church in a city could take an election and put godly people into those places of leadership.
I love that you said that because I think a really big justification in national politics is my vote doesn't matter. There's millions of people voting, like my vote is not going to make a difference. And you know, you could be right, you could be wrong. If a million people thought that, it'd have some impact, you know, but locally, one vote makes a difference.
Yeah.
I love that you pointed that out.
In 2018, our US Senator, Ted Cruz, won by 200,000 votes. And that's the amount of people that voted for him in Dallas County. Think about that. So if Dallas County, which is in a very urban town, would have stayed home, Senator Cruz would have not have been elected. So that's how every vote matters. I mean, I'm just using that. We have to talk in a, you know, candidates and because that's the system we're dealing with.
Right. No, I thought that, like, as soon as you said it, like, my jaw dropped. And I was like, wow, being from Dallas, like, I cannot believe that it was, like, you know, one city could have made the difference.
Yeah. If they'd all stayed home, yeah, he would not be in the U.S. Senate right now.
Yeah. So in it, well, with Christians Engaged, can you give just kind of like, because in this podcast, we're always trying to tell people, hey, these are things you can do. These are ways that you can get involved.
Yeah.
And not all of them are as applicable as I think you would encourage. So what are just some like steps that you would say, you know, say someone like me, average girl living in Austin, she's single, she's like, what, you know, she has a dog, she's going to work. How can she get involved in the political landscape and perform her civic duties?
Well, first of all, I tell Christians, what are you praying about? Because usually what you're praying about or you're mad at when you listen to the news is usually probably something you're supposed to be involved in. So if you're upset that we're, you know, our national debt's up to whatever, 30-something trillion, you know, it's like out of control, or you're upset about the foster care situation or human trafficking or whatever that is, that's probably an issue that you're supposed to get engaged on. You know, if one, on the engagement side, everybody should be participating in some sort of engagement with candidates or elected officials. So I like to tell people, adopt a candidate.
That's
it
cool.
Can be a city council person, somebody on your county government, a state rep, your member of Congress. They're actually very accessible members of Congress. You wouldn't think it, but they go on parades. They have coffee with the congressman. So if you like what you look at your elected official, figure out which ones you like the best. If you like what they're doing, support them. Give them $20. Go to their little grassroots fundraiser. Go walk in a parade with them. Do something with them. Get to know them. Get their cell phone number. Encourage them. Pray for them. Because when they go to Washington, D.C. or they go to Austin, they get disconnected from their community. And mm-hmm. what if you're the bridge to help them remain sane?
Yeah.
You might be.
Honestly.
But we can really make a difference. I'll tell you, when I ran for Congress, I had 100 volunteers that block walked houses and knocked doors for me. And every weekend. And those people that cared enough about the call of God on my life mm-hmm. actually became some of my dearest friends during that season. So get involved with one candidate mm-hmm. somewhere.
Yeah.
Or if you don't like the elected officials, find somebody to run against them and get involved.
I love that. Yeah. And so that's very digestible. You can pray, mm-hmm. which praying should always be our first step, 100%. But then two, you can register to vote.
Yep.
And then you can vote. You can take 15 minutes of your time, maybe 30 if you have to drive far, yep. and vote.
Yeah.
And then the third is get to know them. I think you're saying all the best things. As someone who's like worked with a bunch of members of Congress, it was eye-opening to me how like approachable they are, and how they are like, it is literally my job to serve my people, and I want my people to come to me. They're like, even if they disagree with me, like, I want to hear them. It is my job to reflect their values, to go and take what is important to them and bring it to the state, federal, whatever level they're on. And so I'm glad you brought that up, because everyone should reach out to their local and federal congressmen. It is a big deal. And even Senate, like, all of the above.
We demonize our members of Congress. We demonize our elected officials. And sometimes they should be criticized, okay? I'm not saying they're not perfect.
Yeah.
But we forget these are real people with real feelings, real emotions, real families that are jumping on a plane on a Monday morning and flying to Washington, D.C. from Texas and not seeing their kids all week. Mm-hmm. And then coming back with 1,000 things running through their head, trying to give their wife or their husband enough space to keep their marriage together. Mm-hmm. I hope that my book, I tell a lot of stories about members of Congress that, whether it's Sean Duffy, Lee Zeldin, Congressman Jeb Hensarling, Vice President Mike Pence, and others, of how real these people are. They have real feelings, real lives. And, you know, it's been a blessing to interact with them, to be friends with them, to walk with them, and to see God use their lives. But we need to remember that these people are real people, and mm-hmm. encourage them, pray for them, hold them accountable, but do it in a nice, godly way.
Yeah, for sure. I think social media does a really great job of making these members just sound like sound bites and talking points.
Yeah.
And I think if social media is done well, it can really humanize the candidate and make them more approachable. I mean, credit to AOC. Like, she uses the Instagram platform and I think really makes her audience feel connected to her.
Yeah.
I mean, it's the same way that, like, you know, people look at Taylor Swift and she shares so much personal stuff about herself on Instagram, is always like reaching out to her fans, that people feel a deep connection with her. And it's like, I wish, you know, the Republican side kind of tap into that and give that, because right now it's like, it's just a lot of like very polished, clean cut. You know, it's almost like this could have been shown on a news outlet. So it's like, are we really connecting with them that way? Mm. Not so much. And like, you know, there's the whole Gen Z and even millennials, like that is a big way of how we feel connected to our members. So I've always kind of hoped that like that would eventually catch on our side. I think it will.
We have to tell our stories. I mean, mm-hmm. the issues are only, people are not going to listen to us unless they know that we care mm-hmm. and that we have a personal connection to the mm-hmm. issue. You know, when I was running for Congress, I was the only person in our primary endorsed by Texas Right to Life. And the reason why I was endorsed, because I shared my husband and I's story, that my husband, when he was 16 years old, had paid for his first abortion of mm-hmm. his first girlfriend. And then a few years later, paid for another abortion, and how that absolutely hurt his life. Mm-hmm. That was before he knew Christ and he became a believer. And here we are 10 years into our marriage, and he thinks that I'm going to hate him, I'm going to despise him, I'm going to leave him if I knew the truth about his life.
Wow.
And so we don't really, really put the connection that these issues are human issues that touch men and women. Mm-hmm. And all of these public policy positions have effects on people. And so we need to be telling our stories. And what if your testimony and your story is the one that can really reach people with the truth?
Yeah. Yeah, and that's, I mean, again, like this book is full of stories after stories, encounters after encounters. And, you know, if that could just be translated on social media and more than just like, oh, it's Easter, it's Christmas, here's a picture with my family, yeah, all nice and polished. It's like, you know, love those. So cute. But like, you know, tell us about your hobbies. Like, are you going fishing this weekend? Like, we want to, like, you need to be a normal person to us or else we can't feel connected to you. So like,
let me show you all my Easter eggs that I screwed up and like painted wrong and messed up the little decorations. We should do that.
Literally, that is like, that to me would be like, oh man, I've definitely messed up. Like, that is so relatable to me. Like, it is so relatable. So in chapter 8 of your book, it like really popped up. No, I lost my spot. That was the one I wanted to read. It's fine. We're fine.
Edit.
In chapter 8, you actually talk a lot about, like, you have a whole section on the difference between zeal and courage. Mm-hmm. And, oh, this hit me because I was like, in college, it was a lot of zeal, right?
A lot of zeal.
High school, I'm like, you know, I can think like, oh, I'm so courageous. I'm talking about my beliefs, but it's really like, I just was very excited to share my opinions. And I like your story about how you ended up on the news and your boss is like, what? Tell us a little bit about that story and I'll kind of jump in with like some of my little anecdotes.
Yeah, so I had a friend, I never was politically involved. I was 18 years old or 17 years old in high school. I guess I was 18. So he takes me to a Pat Buchanan rally. So Pat Buchanan was running against George Herbert Walker Bush, right? And so he's telling me his talking points on the way to this rally, why he supports Pat. And I'd never been to a rally. So anyway, I'm there. I'm like, woo, Pat Buchanan, yay. And I mean, this is dating me a little bit. So WBAP 820, their news station was out there. And they saw a young woman, me, you know, 18 years old, walking down. They're like, why are you here at a Pat Buchanan rally?
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, let me. And I just digested and spit out the three talking points that my friend Greg had given me in the car. I had no clue. Right? Really? And what's really funny about that is they're like, are you going to be voting for Pat? Of course I am. I didn't vote in that primary. I never voted for in a primary till years later, right?
Yeah.
So we say things, we have human zeal, we mm-hmm. get excited about things, but that's not real courage. Real courage comes with a well of things on the inside of us. Mm-hmm. I like, when we think about Bible characters, we think about Daniel in the lion's den. Daniel standing up and saying, you know what? You're going to tell me I can't pray. I'm going to still pray morning, noon, and night. Mm-hmm. I'm going to risk my own life. That's courage. Mm-hmm. That's courage. Courage comes out of a well of understanding of who you are, who God is, what your firm convictions are, mm-hmm. and what are you willing to suffer, mm-hmm. really, for truth. And I think we operate a lot of times on human zeal and we're not really thinking about how do we actually build courage. Mm-hmm. But we need to be building courage because the day will come, Taylor, where you're going to be confronted. People are going to be confronted with a choice. Mm-hmm. And we don't pick the battles we fight. For me, it was in 2021, we were 18 months into Christians Engage, and I got a letter from the Internal Revenue Service.
Yes, I'm so glad you're bringing this up. This is big.
I got a letter and it said, we are denying the tax exempt status for Christians Engaged because Bible teachings, this exact quote from the IRS letter, Bible teachings are typically affiliated with the Republican Party in candidates. I know, there's a gasp in the audience right now. They went on to say, because you're teaching on the sanctity of human life, biblical justice, debt and taxation, Israel, these things are inherently Republican, so therefore you're not nonpartisan. Okay, so I looked at that letter and I thought, this is insane. Mm-hmm. Like, the whole letter didn't even make any sense. If you look at the letter on First Liberty Institute's website right now, you'll see a bunch of funny stuff. It's like crazy. So I walked it over to my friend Kelly Shackelford and his team, and they took our IRS appeal. We had 30 days to appeal it. They wrote this incredible brief that the Bible is not a partisan document. If you're going to define the Bible as a partisan document, this is going to affect every church and every ministry in mm-hmm. America that ever talks about a moral issue or any issue, and that we should be able to mobilize voters around any of our public policy positions, even the Bible. And so, yeah, we fought back. The IRS became a national story. I was on Fox News 3 times, and the IRS called and apologized 21 days later.
Wow.
Like, apologized on the phone. Like, called me and said, we're sorry.
Oh, that is crazy. I mean, I was in D.C. when this was happening. I remember hearing about it. And then, like, I remember, like, all of the nonprofits at that time were just, you know, buckling up and being like, ooh, we need to get all our eggs in a row. Because, like, what if they come after us? What if, what if, what if? And I just remember, like, working for so many nonprofits, it's like, we really have to be by the book to make sure that, like, we're not on the chopping block next. Like, it was a very stressful time for
us. Well, and I say that to say, I had a choice. Our board of directors had a choice. We knew if we took on the IRS, right, and really fought that, we could just ignore it and go, well, I guess I should be a 501c4 mm-hmm. or apply to be a PAC or something else. But, you know, we knew we were within the law. All we were doing were educating people on civics and Bible. We weren't mm-hmm. endorsing political parties or candidates. We were doing nothing wrong. Mm-hmm. So, but they could have audited us. They could audit us personal. They can audit us our businesses. So we had to make a choice. Are we going to do this or not? And those moments of courage when you choose to do something that is outside your nature to do, you don't want, I didn't want that fight, mm-hmm. but you have to make a choice. This is the right thing to do. And we did it, and the rest is history. And now we're a national ministry because of the IRS. Thank you, IRS.
That's awesome. Words you will never hear again.
Thank you, IRS. We love you.
Yeah, so that's a really good, you gave 2 great examples of, like, this is what zeal looks like. You know, you're 18 at this rally and you're shooting off the talking points.
And didn't vote.
And didn't vote. And then to the flip side, years later, you're fighting for the right to have your nonprofit status,
yeah.
right? And
yeah. I'm fighting for all churches and ministries in America that yeah, would be threatened.
Like, yeah, so, but in, like, correct me if I'm wrong, but if they had revoked your status because of that, that puts churches in jeopardy because they're preaching the gospel, and that now makes the gospel like a political, I mean, like, how, break that down of, like, why that
yeah,
was so
convoluted. They were saying that the sanctity of human life or the Israel issue or talking about debt, that those were political issues, mm. right? So they were saying you were not nonpartisan because of those, talking about those issues. So if you can imagine a pastor or a TV minister or whoever going, I'm going to talk today about the national debt and how this is immoral for future generations. Mm-hmm. Government shouldn't be paying for more things than they can pay for, right? Or the sanctity of human life. We should be protecting all babies in the womb. They have a right to live. This is not a choice issue. This is a right to live issue for a human being in the womb. Well, then the government can say, well, that's a partisan issue. This is a political issue. You can't talk about that, even though we see it throughout Psalms 139, Jeremiah 1, mm-hmm. Luke 1. You can go through scripture, all throughout scripture, it's a biblical issue. So a lot of times what we're seeing is the culture is trying to define these issues as political when they're really biblical. Mm-hmm. So we try to help pastors say, nope, it's biblical. We need to be talking about them.
Yeah. And that reminds you of kind of, you know, the theme throughout the Bible where it's, you know, what the devil will use to harm you, God will use for your good and for his glory. And that seems exactly that, you know, you got attacked and then all of a sudden it like thrusted you into the national spotlight and got so much attention. And now you're, you know, national entity, not just like based in Texas.
Exactly. Really cool. And when people read that story, they go, oh, okay, I need to start really considering that my liberties could be taken away too.
Mm-hmm. So we always like to get more into like the cultural issues of our day. And you being a Texan, I figured, you know, let's talk about country music. Do you listen to country music? I know you listen to worship music. Do you listen to country music?
Not really. Ray Lynn. I like Ray Lynn.
Did you, growing up, did you, was country music always on in the background or part of your life at all?
So I actually lived in Nashville for 3.5 years growing up. So my dad took me to the Grand Ole Opry. But the only thing I really, I do remember seeing Dolly Parton there once.
Mm-hmm. That's cool.
Which is very cool. But I just remember Goo Goo Cluster Bars. Okay, that's before your time, but they would advertise all these, you know, candy things. And my dad, you know, well, anyway, I digress. But no, I don't really remember too much country music.
Okay, cool. So, you know, maybe we're not going to break down Beyonce's latest album because I'm sure you've, you know, spent all your surplus hours
listening to Beyonce. Yeah. Yeah. I have to save the country.
Yeah. So she came out with this album. I mean, it's been out. And have you happened to see like any of the images associated with it?
Probably not.
I
really don't have any time, Taylor. I'm sorry.
It's your ministry, it's your kids, and Survivor. We do not have time for Beyonce.
No, seriously, Survivor is where it's at. It's very political.
So there's this image of her on horseback, and I will say, like, if you get a chance to look it up, like, I think that, you know, she's from Texas, she's a Texan, and I think the images are very Americana, which I really like. It's like she's riding on a horse, she's holding the American flag, she's wearing, like, kind of like the Texas, like, flag, like, on her person, like, it's in this really fun outfit, and I remember seeing that being like, wow, this is kind of refreshing. It's like someone's not like dumping on the U.S. or like saying like, oh, like, you know, the U.S. sucks. It's terrible. Like everyone here is awful. It was like, wow, she's kind of like propping up and supporting. And there's been like, you know, talk about like, well, what does this cover mean? Because her images are very much tied to her music. And so she's sitting on this white horse running.
Wow.
And she's sitting backwards, like she's facing the camera, but her body is backwards towards it, and she's holding the American flag out of the corner, and it's just part of the American flag. And so there's been all these theories about, like, gosh, what is she trying to say? She trying to say, like, you know, she
we're
sees
a backward
the future
nation.
Yeah, like is it something super negative like that? And then, you know, someone else was like, no, because her hair looks very similar to, it's like platinum, looks very similar to the horse's hair. And it's like, no, she's a part of the horse. She's running forward and she's embracing America. And so there's just all these different ideas. And so it kind of gave me hope of like, hey, it'd be nice if like pop culture would stop like beating up America and saying that like we're the worst country ever, because there's plenty of people all around the world trying to become American citizens. Yeah. They're trying to, they want, you know, religious freedom. There's a lot of places in this world where you don't get the chance to practice your faith.
I say to Christians every day in every church I'm in almost every Sunday, are you excited that you don't live in Venezuela, Cuba, or North Korea right now? I mean, we need to really consider the blessing, whether we were born here or we got here as fast as we can, that we live in a nation where we have the right to worship as we want to worship. You have the right to choose God or not choose God. Mm-hmm. You have the right to raise your family the way you want to raise your family. You can homeschool, you can put them in public school, you can do whatever you want. Mm-hmm. What a blessing. But if we don't consider what we've been given, and we waste it. I believe that I was born in America for such a time as this. Mm-hmm. This generation needs me. This generation needs you. Your generation needs you, right? Mm-hmm. And so if we really see ourselves as a important part of our generation in this country and don't esteem it well, God can use our life for His good.
Yeah. And you mentioned in your book about Egypt, and I know you originally, your first career was like being a missionary. Did you take any trips overseas?
Well, I spent about 6 months in Guatemala. I thought I was going to end up in Latin America, actually. So Guatemala, Mexico area. So I was planning on going full time in missions, and my husband was one of my best friends. He took me out for pancakes and coffee in the state fair one night, and I didn't consider it a date. I thought we were just going out to the state fair as friends, and at the end of the night, we got in his pest control truck. He owned a pest control company, and he said, turned to me and said, I don't want to hold your hand. I don't want to kiss you. I just want to marry you. Yeah. So chapter 10, if you haven't got there yet. So all of a sudden, I am like, my best friend's proposing. I'm on my way to Latin America. What am I doing? And so 3 days later, I said, I will marry you. And
on the third day.
On the third day, I had to do some praying and fasting.
That's amazing.
But something in my heart thought, okay, I can make a better difference in another country. Mm-hmm. And it took me a while as a young person, married, having kids, doing business in America, to realize, you know what? I'm here right now. I can make a difference in my nation. And frankly, we live in a post-Christian world in America. The harvest is ripe. People are looking for God. Every day, Taylor, I walk around our cities and share with my waitress or share with the person at the bank or wherever I go, mm-hmm. I try to talk about the Lord because there is no other hope in our nation. And they don't know it. They've never read the Bible. They don't know it. So there is a harvest field of people out there in this country. And the best way for them to understand that their life matters, America matters, their place in the world matters, is for them to realize that God created them, loves them, and wants to redeem them.
Absolutely. And, you know, even in my friend group, I've noticed that, like, for a long time, there's a big push of, like, atheism, right? Like, and you had Lee Strobel, you know, would go around and do these apologetic conferences of, like,
case for Christ.
Yes, exactly. And I mean, I remember going to one of his conferences in college and just being like, yeah, I need to be armed with these tools. But slowly, I've noticed there's this shift. And it's like, my friends are definitely open. Like, they definitely think that there's, like, a God out there, or there is a higher power. They're open to it. And it's just so interesting how, like, it went from, okay, if I'm going to evangelize, you know, I should have my facts and my figures and my data in my back pocket. And now it's almost been humanized, and they're kind of like, I know there's something else out there, but what is it? And so, I mean, I guess just for our audience listening, it's like, you kind of have to reset your tools a little bit and just have the conversation. And I think what you're doing takes a lot of courage, and I think it's intimidating for a lot of people. And so what I've slowly done is, like, you know, you're around your friends. If they're not Christians, let them see your everyday life. Let them see those little changes and invite them into a safe place to ask questions. And so I've had some of my friends come up to me and say, like, oh, I'm kind of Jesus curious right now. And I'm like,
yay,
love that. Tell me more. And, you know, and it's just, I've slowly had really good conversations, and they all know I go to church. And so more and more of them have asked me, like, hey, can I go with you? And it's always like, absolutely no pressure. Like, anytime you want to go. And I try to make it, you know, fun. And so I just, putting that little pin out there of, like, to our friends, you know, just be there for them.
Be there for them. Know that God wants to shine his love through you and your eyes and your hug and your words. You know, we don't have to know everything to make a difference in somebody else's life. We just have to be listening, loving, discerning, and responding. We actually teach people in our classes, our civic engagement classes, how to share the gospel with this little wristband. Cool. And it's simple, of Romans 5:8. God demonstrated his love towards us that while we were yet sinners, Christ died for us. That simple statement, he loves you. He demonstrated his love for you. That is a life-changing thing for everybody, whether it's my husband who is a drug addict for 7 years and came to Jesus, or me as a pastor's kid. I needed to know that God loved me. And so we overcomplicate things. We think we have to have all the answers and all the intellectual knowledge. But in reality, people just need to know they're loved, and they need to know they're loved by God and loved by us.
Yeah, couldn't have said it better myself. Kind of wrapping up this episode, I did want to, have you ever heard of the TV show Young Sheldon?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I've watched several episodes.
Do you like it?
Yeah, it's quirky.
It's quirky.
Yeah, it's good writing. I'm all about the writing on TV. If I'm going to watch TV shows, it better be good writing.
Yeah, so I didn't realize it was a spinoff from The Big Bang Theory, and I just think it is hilarious. I mean, it's East Texas, right?
Oh, yeah.
And you have the accents. It's East Texas in the 80s and 90s, and, you know, the brother who talks like this, and you're just like, it kind of gives me King of the Hill vibes.
Yeah.
But that was going to be something else that, like, I was going to bring up on the cultural side of, like, kind of TV shows like that, where it's like, you know, the mom's a Christian, and they have all these little moments where, like, she'll question her faith, or she'll have a hard moment at the church. And I really appreciate that the show doesn't belittle it or dog on it. They kind of give it the space that it deserves, where it's like, as a Christian, I look at them like, I really like the way they handled that scene. That was really nice.
Well, people have questions, and people are real people, and they're navigating, you know, culture, faith, all these things daily. And so we can't just, like, belittle people for actually believing in something. We need to actually, you know, realize that people are looking for answers, and, hey, we might find the answer.
Yeah. And it's funny because, like, the show just got super popular. They put it on Netflix, and, like, I was looking at the statistics, and they just, like, skyrocketed whenever it was launched on the platform. And it's all on all the other platforms now, too. But it's just kind of like there's something happening in our culture where it's like Beyonce's doing a country album. Young Sheldon, this little East Texas kid, you know, is, like, that TV show's skyrocketing. They think they're going to do a spinoff of it with the son and his person. I don't want to ruin it for anyone. So yeah, I'm like, yeah. How do I say this without like spoiling the end? And then, you know, there's a famous model, Bella Hadid, who just kind of like, have you heard of her? Mm-mm. She's kind of like, she's, you know, mom was a famous model. Her and her sister are very famous models. She just kind of like wiped her hands of like the fashion world overnight and, you know, started dating this cowboy from Texas and has been going and competing in rodeos.
Oh, wow.
On cutting horses and supposedly just bought a house in Fort Worth. And it's just like, I'm done with this whole fashion life. Like, I'm done. Like, I'm living the country life. Like, there's something happening in America where it's like people of all walks of life are being drawn to this, you know, Americana, country, Southern love atmosphere. And so I just think it's something that, like, you know, kind of keep your eye on of like,
we're looking for a community.
Yeah.
We're tired of being disconnected. Gen Z specifically, I spend a lot of time with young people. We're taking 24, 18 to 30 year olds on our DC trip this summer.
Oh, cool.
On scholarship. But we, you know, I realize they want real relationships. They want you to talk to them. I just stick them in my car with me, take them to a church on a weekend or hang out with them wherever I can, because they're tired of being disconnected, just being on social media. And I think people are looking for a simpler life. They're looking for faith, family, and freedom.
Mm.
And that's what we really want. And that's what we're trying to do in even as we encourage Christians to get civically engaged. Those are the things we're trying to protect, is faith, family, and freedom. And if we don't do it, who's going to do it?
Yeah, well said. Well, Bunny, thank you so much. I love your name. Thank you so much for coming onto the podcast. Can you tell people where they can get your book?
Yeah, go to Amazon, Jesus and Politics, One Woman's Walk with God in a Mudslinging Profession, Amazon, ChristianBook.com, Barnes & Noble, or our website is ChristiansEngage.org. And you can take the pledge to pray, vote, and engage, check out all of our classes, and get the book there as well.
Perfect. We will link all of that in our show notes, and we will see you next week. Bye, y'all.